Steve said, let's dig deep. Well, tonight we'll try to do that in a couple of ways and show you some things that I think, if not for just about everybody here, maybe everybody here, this will be something that, we never noticed that before, and that's very, very interesting. It's a point about heaven. We've left off in Matthew chapter 25. We ended up in the final verses of Matthew 24, talking about some things related to Jesus' next and final coming. Now in Matthew 25, we went through the story of the 10 virgins, five wise, five foolish, and how they describe people, what things will be like when the Lord returns. And then last week, we partially went through the teaching about the talents. We got down through verses 16 through 18. Remember, there are three fellows who each received some talents. First guy, he receives how many?
Five.
Second guy receives two. Third guy receives one. All right, let's then pick up with verse 16 and read down through verse 18. Verse 16 says, straight away or immediately, he that received the five talents went and traded with them and made five other talents. In like manner, he also that received the two gained other two. But he that received the one went away and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. One of the key verses in this section is the word straight away or immediately. When we think about this word and we apply it to Christian living today, what's it suggest? How long do we want to wait before we become a Christian who's active? I mean, there are a lot of things after we become a Christian that we don't know. Maybe a lot of things we're not going to be comfortable doing for a period of time. But once we come up out of the water, we're a Christian, then it's time to go ahead and see if we can find something to do in that new way of life. This fellow, and we'll talk about this a little more in just a minute, but he's got his five talents. And what does he start to do? He begins to trade with them. This, on the surface, may not seem to be that significant of a word, but it is a very, very important word. He takes his five talents, he's trading, he's working with them, and in the end, what's he produce? Goes from five to ten. He is able to double the number of talents that he has. All right, is that also true for the fellow who has the two talents? He's got two, he ends up with four, because he also was successful in the work that he did. The third fellow, verse 18, what do we find about him? How well did he trade? All right, he's got one, and he takes his talent, and he decides that he's going to bury it. He's not going to trade, and there could be a lot of reasons for that. Now, if you think about this for just a second, some other passages are probably going to come to mind. Here's this fella. He takes his talent, and he buries it. Any other passages spring to mind? Got one of them back there in Joshua chapter 7, verse 21. There's that guy by the name of Achan. Was he a good guy or a bad guy? All right, he was a bad guy. You know, he sees some wealth, he takes it, and then what's he do with it? He buries it. He hides it in the ground. Can you see the connection between that? Now, in that particular case, things were a little different. He, you know, wasn't entitled to that kind of thing. In this case, the fellow was hiding it. But when you begin to look at some passages in the Bible, another would be Matthew 13, verse 44. That would be the fella, he's out there, and he sees this field, he finds a very valuable item, and what's he do? He hides it. He sells, right, he hides it, goes out and sells everything that he has, and then comes back and buys the field. So when you think about some cross-references as far as hiding money or hiding wealth, it's usually not pictured in a very positive way, and that's certainly what we have here. Now this third guy, he received substantially less than the first two. But would you say that he's still responsible for using it in a good way? Yeah. I mean, Matthew 25, 16 through 18 leaves no doubt that all three of these fellows had to use what they possessed. In the first century, there are a lot of ways to gain wealth. People were able to buy and sell cattle, just as people today sometimes sell livestock. That was done by people in that day and time. Pearls. Some people traded in pearls. Other people were able to trade in oriental spices. And today, the message is there's still varied talents that people have, different resources, and people need to use those to whatever degree that they have and not hide them. Anything that you want to add or ask before we talk about this word trade? Okay. As I said, this is an interesting word. Let's run some passages where it's used. I'll just give you some of them and then highlight some others, some to read and some to just think about. Matthew 7:23. This is a well-known passage, but we might not, if we didn't look at the original text, know that it's the same word that's used here and there. Matthew 7:23. Who wants to be a reader? Harvey? Julie, if you'll pick up the next reference that we want, John 6, verse 27, and then I don't know if it was Dolores or Don. Okay, it was Dolores. For the next reference, John 9, verse 4, Then let's also look at Acts 10:35. Betty? And we'll not look at that one. We will pick up 1 Timothy 4:14. Josh. Let's start with Matthew 7:23.
Then will I profess unto them, I never knew thee, depart from me, ye that work iniquity.
Okay, now you don't see the word trade there. But would you like to guess? It's the same word in the original text. Would you like to guess what word is equivalent? All right, the works. Jesus says, you work. You're stewards. You're trading in iniquity. Well, that's a very interesting concept, isn't it? When we look at these two passages, God says, as you go through life, you're trading in something. You're trading in righteousness, or you're trading in unrighteousness, sin. It's that same message that we find throughout the whole Bible. There are two roads, two ways, and we choose which way, which road that we want. Then John 6, verse 27.
Do not labor for food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seat on you.
Okay, thank you. We'd once again probably not guess that this passage has this word that's translated trade here in Matthew 25, but it's the same word. And Jesus says, you need to trade. You need to work. You need to be involved with the right spiritual things so that you can go to heaven. And then John 9, verse 4, Dolores, is that you?
Mm-hmm. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work.
Now this passage is really related to the Lord in the first century, but I think still it has some application to our day and time. The Lord says, if you're going to trade, if you're going to use your tools and resources for me, do you have a limited amount of time? Yeah. The day is going to come when we leave this life. So the Lord says we've got to trade, we've got to work while it is still day, while there's still an opportunity. This is also true for us as we go throughout our lives. Acts 10, verse 35. Now, most of the passages that we've looked at have used the word work thus far, but it's translated trade over here in Matthew 25. Now, Peter, the house of Cornelius, he says, the one who trades, the one who works in righteousness, that person is acceptable to God. Well, isn't that exactly what we see here in the parable of the talents? These fellows, they were trading, they were using their opportunities while it was day, and God says, I'm pleased. You're going to get a reward. But there's some other people. Remember Matthew 7:23? What do they trade in? They trade in iniquity. They trade in sin, like this one man in Matthew 25, and they don't fare very well. Then this passage, which I didn't ask. I think I did. Galatians 6:10. Josh, is that you? Okay. Okay. Didn't we have you down for passage? Or was it 1 Timothy 4:14? Okay. All right. Galatians 6:10. We're familiar with it. As we have opportunity. Let's do what? Let's work that which is good towards all men, and especially towards them that are in the household of faith. There again is the idea of working or trading, being involved. It's a big thing when it comes to the Bible. It's the very opposite of being a pew sitter. And then 1 Timothy 4:14. We could also look at 2 Timothy 1:6, but we'll not look at that passage. 4:14.
Do not neglect the gift you have, which was given you by prophecy when the council of elders laid their hands.
Okay, he says, don't do what with your gift? Don't neglect it. Well, I find this passage to be interesting because it was written to a preacher. Preachers may not trade. They may not do the things that they can do. But that's true for every other Christian. So it's information that should spur us on to do what's right. Did one of you ladies have a hand? Okay, I thought there was the start of a point. Okay, anything you want to touch base on before we look at verses 19 to 23 in Matthew 25, right? Yes, that's their work. You know, they just can't sit back and say, well, okay, we're going to close our eyes and sit in the chair and it's all going to work out. It doesn't, I mean, they'll be poor. So there has to be that activity. And I like that word trade. When you know that it's often translated work, it makes a great point. Okay, let's pick up then with verses 19 to 23, Matthew 25. Now after a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and maketh a reckoning with them. And he that received the 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Lo, I have gained other 5 talents. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will set thee over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. And he also that received the 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Lo, I have gained other 2 talents. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will set thee over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. The Lord of these men returned. But when did he come back? It's in the text. It's in the first verse that we read, verse 19. When's he come back? Yeah. Now, here's something that you may not have noticed before, and we'll pick up some of the passages in conjunction with it. Who is this Lord, or this master that gives, who's it represent? He gives the talents out, goes away, comes back, and then things get checked out. All right. It's a reference to Christ. If that's correct, and it is, then as we think about the Lord's return, what point do we pick up from Matthew 25, verse 19? He was saying, I'm going to come back, but I'm not going to return for a long time. Now, how long is a long time? I don't know. For some people, they might say it's 100 years. Somebody might say it's 1,000 years. Another person might say it's 10,000 years or 100,000 years. But this point is something that Jesus wanted, apparently, to emphasize, and it's really easy to miss unless we're paying close attention to the text. Let's go back a little bit. Let's look at a couple cross-references here. Matthew 24. In the latter part of that chapter, we said we have some information here about Jesus returning at the end of time. And he talks about how some servants will not continue in faithfulness. 48 says, but if that servant shall say in his heart, my Lord does what? My Lord tarries. Do you see how that is the same as Matthew 25, verse 19? He's tarrying. He's staying away for a long time. This is not the only time that we see this point. Let's back up a little bit to what we've already covered. Matthew 25, verse 5. There in the teaching about Jesus' return at the end of time, the five wise and the five foolish virgins. Now while the bridegroom tarried three times, tarry, he's going to come back after a long time. I want to show you another passage. This is Mark's account, Mark 13, verse 34. Looking at the first part of that, I'll give you a minute to get there. Somebody want to take care of that for us, Mark 13. Verse 34. Okay, Steve, I saw you first. Harvey, we'll get you for the next cross-reference. Thank you. Mark uses an adjective. And this adjective has the sense of not only taking a journey, but it means taking a far journey. Or we would even say going out of the country. Now, in our day and time, that's not too difficult. You can hop on a plane and, maybe within a few hours or certainly within a day, you can go out of the country without any kind of difficulty. But in this day and time, it was going to be something that required a good bit of distance. Mark 13, 32 and 33 talks about the Lord's next and final return. Then he says this in verse 34.
It is as when a man sojourning in another country, having left his house and given authority to his servants, to each one his work, commanded also the porter to watch.
Okay. Now with that translation, you can see the point emphasized pretty well. This fellow goes where? He goes into another country, which would have taken a considerable amount of time. And as he gets in that country, what does he do? Steve's translation, he sojourns. He stays there for a while. Now, again, no one else can put a time frame on this. But Jesus, at least four or five times, and even Peter, as you think about something that Peter wrote in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 4, do you remember he says scoffers are going to come? And one of the questions, he says, will be what? Well, let's get it. If we're not recalling it from memory offhand.
Where's the Christ? He has to come back.
Yeah. And these people are actually using that fact to mock things. He says in that fourth verse, and saying, the false teachers, where is the promise of his coming? For from the day that the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. The delay appears to be significant, that whether Peter was talking about something in our past or in our future, can't say that for sure, but he does recognize that this delay, if you will, would cause some people to essentially say, well, all things have continued, it's been a long time, and where's the promise of his coming? If the disciples were listening, if they recalled this information, it should have been helpful as far as trying to answer some of the questions. Is the Lord going to come back within the first century? Well, they were able to say it's going to be a long time. And as I said, for us, it could be another, 500,000, another 10,000 years. But he is very, very specific on this point, and I think that is worth looking at. Anything that you want to add or ask before we say a couple more things? Okay? The Lord, whether he comes back tonight or, in 1,000 years, the verses do tell us that we do need to be faithful. And then you see this other little point from verse 19. He says, now after a long time, the Lord of those servants comes and does what? He makes a reckoning with these people. Now let's think about this for a second. Who's writing this book? Matthew is. What was Matthew's background? He was a tax collector. You think he did any accounting? I'm sure that he got involved with some financial numbers because of his background. Matthew is the only writer to use this word. And it is a writer that describes the settling of accounts. I find that to be interesting because it helps demonstrate how Bible writers were able to use their individual experiences and God was able to use their personalities in the books that they constructed. But here, Matthew uses this word to say God's going to settle the accounts. And as we look at this settling of the accounts, if you will, was it done as a group or was it done individually? Okay, that's true. All three had an account settled. But was that settled? It was settled individually. He did make sure that everybody got checked out. But it wasn't a group. It wasn't, we've got 10 people here and 7 are okay, so we're going to pass the whole group. But it was an individual thing. This also tells us that a time is going to come, just as we find in other verses, that there is going to be a judgment day. Each one is going to be checked out individually. There is going to be the individual one, and the accounts are going to be settled. The people who have not been treated right, those people will receive what's due. The people who chose to be unrighteous, they're also going to be treated in the right way. Again, anything you want to add or ask before we make a couple more points, Ray?
Yeah, in Matthew, the 18th chapter, verse 23, it talks about that same thing. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts.
Yes. It's the same idea where God says, okay, the book of Revelation says the books were opened, which is the same kind of deal. It's time for each one to be evaluated. And at that time, there's no way to go back and say, let's adjust the books, or I want to pay what's due. God says, this is how things are, and we're going to judge you out of the books, and things are going to proceed from there, whether that's good or bad. You have already written your record, and that's going to be it. Now, as we look at these first two guys, the 5-talent and the 2-talent fella, the text tells us that they both fell into the same category. In fact, as you look at what's said about these two guys, they're given the exact same commendation. Both of them are described as faithful. Both of them are described as good, even though the amount that they were working with is not the same. Now, to me, that's encouraging. It should be encouraging to every single Christian. Somebody comes along and says, look at me. I've never been able to do this, 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 or this. I'm not talented in this or this area. God says, it's okay. You're not being measured based on what somebody else has or what somebody else can do. You're going to be checked out based on what you have, what you can do. Harvey, you had a thought?
I've heard it said many times that God only expects from you what you can do.
Yeah. In this particular case, they were faithful over a few things. God says, it's time to enter into the joy of your Lord. We gave a few weeks ago, Matthew 6, verse 20, a cross-reference. Jesus said, lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven. That's what these guys did. And now it's payday, if you will. Now, there is something here, what I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the class. If you have never noticed this, and I'm pretty sure that most have not, I'm going to shock you with something. People sometimes come along and say, what's heaven like? There are really, as you look at the New Testament and you study the Old, there's not a lot of information in there about what heaven is like. A lot of people think there's a ton of stuff about Revelation, or heaven in Revelation, but the view that we've advanced in that class is that really doesn't seem to be the case. But as you look at this, let's go back and do a little thinking about what we talked about in verses 14 and 15. We talked about the talents, and we said that they probably were around, 70 pounds. We also said one talent, if it was silver, was equivalent to how much? Anybody remember? How many years? 20 years' wages. Now think about that. A lesser talent, 20 years' wages. So this fellow that gets the 5 talents, what's he have as far as wages if we use the limited value of a talent? 100 years' wages. I also made a point about gold. I said if the talent was gold or something similar instead of silver, anybody remember what that would do? You would multiply it times 30. Now that's a lot of money. Even if you're just dealing with 100 years' wages, that's a ton of money. Everybody with me so far? 100 years' wages. How does Jesus describe it? Let's read verse 21 again. His Lord said unto him, "Well done. You've been a faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things." 20 years' wages. Anybody want to say that that's pretty chintzy? Or that's a few item? I don't think so. Yeah, sure, when you look at it from that standpoint, or even the value. Can you imagine if we're dealing with gold? You do the math. And, you know, you're 3,000 years of wages. Imagine being paid the equivalent of 3,000 years of your household income every year. Even if you're just making $10,000 or $15,000 a year, that's a ton of money. And yet Jesus, as he talks about 3,000 years of pay, perhaps, it may not be quite that much, but 3,000 years of pay, when he stacks that against what people will get in eternity, how does he describe that 3,000 years of pay? Few, yeah, a little bit. There is not much there. If you want a description of how glorious or how magnificent heaven is, this to me seems to be one of the best in the Bible. Anybody ever see that before? Okay, well, I was right in saying that that may not have been something that you noticed before. But it is a terrific illustration of what the eternity is going to be like. And if you can kind of put your mind around that, can you begin to see why Jesus had some things to say in the New Testament? He said, how much is heaven worth? Your right eye? If it costs you that, is it worth it? It's worth everything that you have. And Jesus, that's why he said, be willing to sacrifice your life. Revelation 2:10, be faithful how much? Even to the point of death. There'd be people, if they were promised 100 years' wages, there was a guy, a couple of them, business owner, they need a little money. So they go up to the business owner and say, well, I'll have etched into my head, I'll have a tattoo of the business name, for a small amount of money. But we're dealing with something that's far, far bigger than that.
So that we say amazing grace. We've been here for 10,000 years. We know less than what we have begun. Mm-hmm. It's never ending.
Right. Peter, as he talked about that, it should be 1 Peter 1, verse 4. The inheritance, it doesn't fade away. So as far as a cross-reference, that would be an excellent one. But even the value, where he says, you're going to be set over many things. Now, a few things is 3,000 years of pay. To be set over many things, I have no idea what that means. But I can say it's off the chart as far as the benefit, as far as the reward that God's people are going to get. And it's just an amazing illustration.
Another thing, one that had only two talents, that was the same reward as the one that had five.
Yeah. Yeah, so nobody's going to feel like they were cheated if they are on the right side of eternity. Anything else that you want to mention? Ray?
That was all given to them up front.
Yes. And I think that's another great point. I didn't have that in my notes, but I think that's another thing. People will sometimes say, well, we've got this great reward, but you have to wait for it. You have to wait until somebody passes away, or there's some of the clause in there that other events are going to trigger that. But in this particular case, save people. It's you've done what you needed to do on the earth, and here it is, and here it is in full. And I mean, it's just unbelievable as far as a promise. And that needs to be one of the things that encourages us to be faithful as we go through this life. There is another thing here that may be going on. Jesus talked about entering into the joy of the Lord. As you go back and you look at this particular culture, this is one of the things that was done. Just as we in this country saw 100 or so years ago, slaves being freed sometimes, the master would like a slave, or maybe the slave had done a great good deed for a master, that slave would be free by the master. The same thing was sometimes done in the first century. Slaves would be freed by masters. And often when that was done, they would sit down and there would be a big gathering. The master would sometimes set the slave up in business. For example, let's say that the fellow was skilled as far as carpentry. The master might buy him a little shop, you know, this is going to be the place of business, and here are some tools, and we're going to be in a partnership. And that really seems to me to be some of the background here, that God says, I'm inviting you in, and you're going to have a partnership with me, and we don't know exactly what all that means, but it's a pretty, pretty fantastic offer. Anybody else before we pick up 24 to 27? Dolores? You know, have 72 virgins and, you know, your own bedroom and, you know, all those things that they promise, physical things. But we don't have a lot of information about it in the scriptures, and maybe that's why it's not taught. But if we take the time to dig out things like this, there is enough information there that if it's presented to people, they can say, wow. And that should be one of the things that spurs people on to say, I want to be committed. And this is something that I do not want to miss. It also seems to me that this is a possibility. If you can imagine someone who is exposed to a situation, let's just use a silly illustration to try to point out what I'm attempting to say. Somebody says, if you show up at the Walmart parking lot at 2 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, you're going to get 3,000 years of pay. Well, people probably wouldn't believe that, but anyway. And somebody doesn't show up. They're told about it. They've seen it in the newspaper, they've heard it in the radio, and they decide not to show up. And then they decide later that night they're going to go over to a friend's house, and the friend says, hey, look, they've got a money. They've got a room just stacked full of currency. They said, I stopped at Walmart at 2 o'clock, and I got my 3,000 years of pay. How do you think that person is going to feel that didn't go? Yeah, I think that plus some. Can you imagine the shock and the grief and the sorrow? It almost sounds like weeping and gnashing of teeth, doesn't it? I don't know if the unsaved people are going to get any kind of glimpse at heaven or not. But I wonder a little bit, based on here, if they may not get at least a hint. And God may say, this is what I had prepared for you. You rejected me. And now you're going to lose it, and you're going to lose it for how long? It's going to be eternally gone. Now, pain, I believe that that's going to be in hell and all those other things that Jesus talked about as far as the blackness and so forth. But to me, when you think about what we've described, this, the Lord says, is a small thing. If people get a glimpse of what the big stuff is and they miss it, to me, that's got to be part of the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. But we don't know. Don?
Sat on the 5 talents, the master came back, he would be in the same boat as the 1 talent guy.
As far as being lost?
As being lost.
Yes.
So, to me, it would be, if I put it in the vernacular of the current era we're in, a preacher that's really a good preacher, that in his preaching, his work through his lifetime, is responsible for leading innumerable souls to Christ. And us that don't have the ability to preach like that, do what we can. We're still in the same league as he is when it comes to the time of Christ's return, if we're faithful to the end.
Yes, I want to make sure that we're thinking the same thing here, and class-wise, we're all on the same page. When it comes to evangelism, and this is true even for preachers, not everybody might have 5 stars in that particular column. But everybody does have at least 1 star or some degree of responsibility in that area. And
I was referring that preacher to the 5-talent guy that went out and worked.
Right.
And invested and made 5 more talents. Mm-hmm. So that preacher basically had talents that I don't have, some other people don't have.
Yeah.
But I have 2 talents, and I work as hard as I can with my
right.
talents. Then basically, I inherit the same thing that he does.
Yes.
And all these, the 5-talent guy, the 2-talent guy, and 1-talent guy, looks to me like in a parable that basically they were saved, converted.
They were what?
They were converted.
Converted, okay.
That's when they got the talent that was, they received Christ.
Okay.
I assume that's what this means. And but the one talent guy, he didn't take it any farther. He walked away, and that was it. He didn't do anything with his talent. So come judgment day, show me your works without faith.
Yeah, and James, that's James' way of dealing with it. He says, you know, you've got faith. Well, I can show you this guy that has works, but you need both to please God. So this message, it just keeps coming through in dozens, if not hundreds of ways from Genesis. You know, Adam and Eve, it's the same kind of deal. They were supposed to be faithful. They chose to be unfaithful, and they faced some consequences. Now, what happens to them in eternity, God's going to, you know, figure that out for them at that time. And the other thing I think that we can add to that point, I didn't have this, I did have this in the notes, but didn't mention it yet. How many people do you think are five talented people in life? Not literally, but I mean, here you have a guy with five, two, and one. Not many. I mean, you can look at almost any field. You find some doctors, for example, you need heart surgery. Well, there might be a dozen doctors in town that can do the procedure and do it okay. But there's that one doctor that everybody wants, right? Lots of people can repair stuff, but then there's that guy perhaps down the street, he has a little shop, and he always knows what to do. So every field has the people that have the five stars. But in this particular case, we don't have to be a five-star person. We don't have to be that person that has great notoriety in a particular field to please God. The key is faithfulness. We use those talents that we have, whatever they are.
We can even be a one-star or a one-talent person. As long as we use it, we are just as good well as the two and
five. Sure, absolutely. You know, the old saying, too many cooks in the kitchen. You know, not everybody can be a chief. There has to be some Indians and so forth. That's true. Not everybody is going to be at the top of the field, but God does not require that. It is, have you taken what you possess, and are you faithful with it? Those are the key things. And that's why Matthew 24, as it ends, there is that great emphasis on being faithful. He doesn't say be the best. Now, if he said that, there would be a lot fewer people in heaven. But you have to be faithful with what you have, and that's the standard. Yeah. He did not see himself as the best speaker. And there were some other things, as you know, he looked at his past, for example. Others had in his mind apparently a better past. He seems to have still carried around some guilt for a long time. But he said, I'm going to be faithful.
He also talked about the gifts.
Yes.
The prophecy.
Yeah. There were some miraculous gifts today. We're past that time, but we've got some natural abilities. And sometimes those can be furthered. Okay, let's then pick up with 24 through 27. 24th verse says, and he also that received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou didst not sow, and gathering where thou didst not scatter. And I was afraid, and went away and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, thou hast thine own. But his Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I did not scatter. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the bankers, and at my coming I should have received back mine own with interest. As we said, not everybody receives the same number of talents, and certainly there are many people who are not the five talent folks in the world, but as we talked about, the key thing is to be faithful. Here we have this particular fella. The Bible says he knew. He was well-versed in what his Lord required. He knew that he had a responsibility to be faithful, but he tried to avoid this responsibility by saying the Lord was hard. The Lord was harsh. He was severe. Now, if you're talking to somebody, you can sometimes say some hard things to them, but it's sometimes good to see if you can rework, tone down the thought a little bit. When this fellow says, you're a hard man, what do you suspect about the tense? Yeah. Now, can you imagine that to saying? Can you imagine saying that to somebody? It's one thing. You tell a person, well, you're angry. That might upset them. They don't want to go back and think about that event. But you're always angry. That's probably not going to go so well. And now you're telling this master, you are, present tense, continuous action, a severe guy to work for. Well, that's probably not the way to win friends and influence people. This is, though, what he said to this Lord, and it didn't go very well. When you look at these words, I think there is the implication, we can probably infer from this, that he probably had a bad attitude. And today there are still some people who have a bad attitude when it comes to God. Now this fellow, as he talks about his master, he compares him to a farmer. And as he gives this comparison, what's the point? He says, when it comes to crops, what do?
You sow.
Oh, okay. You know, you're not out there sowing, but you're able to reap them. You're a pretty shrewd operator. And in this particular case, you've given me some money, but as I held on to that, what was my reaction? I was afraid, maybe even terrified. So this fellow says, I know what you're like, present tense, and you gave me this money, I was afraid, so that caused me to do what? I went out and
buried it.
I went out and found a place to put it in the earth, and I dug it up. There's a French proverb, which I think is a good one for this man's actions. It says, he who excuses himself, accuses himself. And that's a pretty good statement. Parables, you don't always have as much detail as you might like, and as we said before, there's usually one main point. But as you look at this fella, do you think that there might be the hint of envy? I mean, you have this one guy, he gets 5 talents, 20 years' wages times 5. The other fella, he gets 20 years' wages times 2. And this fella just gets 20 years' wages. I wonder if maybe envy was not part of this particular fella's problem, and maybe he felt like he was cheated. At least it seems to me that there is the hint of that. What should this man have done? Rather than feel cheated, rather than look at others with jealousy or envy, what should have he considered? What should he thought about?
He got out of it.
Well, okay. I think Dolores, you started, and then we'll let Betty finish it out.
He got out of it, what he put into
yeah.
it, which was nothing.
That's right.
I just said he needed to use what he'd been given.
Yeah. To those two things, I'll add this as well. Do you think he got about all he could handle? I would say, yeah. And today, are there still not people like that in the world? Why, he got, she got.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they did. In the workplace, it happens sometimes. He got promoted before me. Well, maybe that's true. But what was true of him? What was true of her? They were ready for the promotion. They were ready for the job. And this other person was not. So in this particular case, the Lord, especially if we're dealing with Jesus, as we've discussed, we have a situation where he got what was right, what he should have received, the proper amount, and yet he failed to do what's right. There's also another lesson here. If we're using this parable to teach some things about the end of time judgment, and that would be a correct explanation for it, do you think there are going to be some folks at the end of time who offer excuses when it comes? Yeah, I mean, you see that in Matthew chapter 7, do you not? After the text says, Lord, Lord, did we not? Then he launches into the various excuses. This passage tells us that excuse makers are not going to fare too well on the day of judgment. It's also interesting, I think, as you look at this fellow, we've talked about this a few times in the past. There are, especially in our day and time, people who have the idea they can please God by negative righteousness. What do we mean when we talk about negative righteousness? Yes. Well, I don't beat my wife. I don't do this, and I don't do that, and I don't do 10,000 other things. Well, all those things may be true. But is the way to heaven avoiding all those things? It's not going to work. How come? Because we're still not going to live a perfect life. We might eliminate 99% of the sin in our lives, 99.9. And yet, what about that 10th? Is it enough to kill us? It's enough to condemn the soul. So this fella, he could have made perhaps that argument as well. He could have said, I didn't squander the money. I didn't embezzle the money. I didn't lose the money. There's no indication that he was dishonest with it. He simply failed to act. Then when you think about the other point that we made a little earlier, sometimes, and there can be cases where this is true, a person says, I don't have time. I'm too busy. Well, all right. That would be correct on some occasions. But did this fellow have time? Yeah, remember the Lord stayed away for a long time, so he couldn't say there's not enough time. Could he say, I just didn't have enough money. Oh, I would have gone out and invested. I would have tried to make more. Could he have made that excuse? He could have tried. But if you've got 20 years' pay, it's pretty tough to come along and say, well, I just didn't have any resources to work with. So he really had no way to go back and offer any kind of good excuse, though he did try a little bit. And then he might have said, well, I was okay in time, I was okay in resources, but you know, I just didn't have any investment experience. didn't know where to put the money.
He wasn't motivated.
That's right. Because as you look at verse 27, what's the text say? You could have put the money where? Could have taken it down the bank. But this fellow, he was too lazy. Maybe he had somebody else dig the hole. But I don't think that's true. But in this particular case, he was not even willing to take it down to the bank and follow up with it there. He was lazy. So Jesus, he actually comes out and uses words to describe that kind of attitude. He uses the word slothful. And then in verse 26, we also find the word wicked. There could have been a situation where at least he got some money with it. And, you know, 20 years of pay, you could pick up at least a little interest on that. Now, if you have the King James translation, as I read through that, you probably noticed a word that's different than I read in the ASV. Usury. Well, now, if you saw that word, that probably got your attention. Usury, good word or bad word?
Depends on which way you look at it.
Well, yeah. What do we mean by usury? What kind of interest is usury?
Exorbitant.
Yeah, it's exorbitant. I mean, it's like if everybody else is charging 5%. You've seen some of these payday loan places? We'll lend you $20 for 3 days and you pay us back with?
60.
Yeah, it's way up there. Well, that's usury. Yeah, it's usury. The word that's used here does not mean usury. It does not mean anything other than what you would expect as far as normal interest. So if you like marginal notes, you may make a note here. It doesn't mean that it's exceptionally high interest. It would be the typical interest, and that would be consistent with the fact that we're dealing with God and spiritual things. Then something else. Do you see a word that is something like ought? Jesus says, you ought. Well, sometimes we use ought to simply say, well, that's a good idea. But the word that's translated ought means it's necessary. It's the same word that we find over in John 4 as far as worship. God is spirit and truth. They that worship God must worship him in spirit and truth. That word that's translated must, it is the same term there. It's like saying a triangle must have three sides. So that term tells us that this man had a duty. He had a serious responsibility to be productive with what he possessed. Today there are a couple of practical lessons, I think, for us. When you look at people who neglect things in the spiritual realm, based on this teaching, would you say that that's a sin? If you are neglectful. Yeah. There are some people that want to say, well, I'm a Christian, and I'm going to go out and sort of bury my faith somewhere, and then at the right time, we'll just dig it up and hand it back to God, and God says that's simply not going to work. If we have situations where Christians do not seek to do anything for the Lord, they never try to have a positive impact in the world, then they're going to turn out to be like this man. Some say, and this goes back to what Don said in the book of James, James chapter 2, they believe in God and you know they want to please God, but the life is faith without works. And you remember how James summed up that life? He says it's dead. You're lazy. You're slothful. You're a neglectful servant. So when the Lord comes, and we're not going to get to this tonight, we found a good stopping place. But the Lord, if you skip ahead a little bit, you probably already know. What's he say about this man's fate? Do what with this talent? Take it away. Send him where? Not into the joy of the Lord, but in this case, this fellow goes. All right. He loses what he has, and then it's off to the place of the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. That's hell. Don?
Very quickly, so I would ask, what do you mean? So also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, it's dead. How do you mean by that?
Yeah, it does. You've got resources, and they may be meager compared to what other people had, and we talked about this a little bit as far as last week. You have somebody that's over in Africa. I mean, what they possess, not even remotely close to what we have. And yet God says each one will one day give an individual accounting, and we want to make sure we're not going to be perfect with the things that we have and use. We may not be able to double what we possess, but we can be faithful. And that is the key point. Have we been faithful? Right?
We see from the one talent man that he was not really expected to make two talents. Mm-hmm. At least the Lord would have been happier if he had at least done something.
Yes.
Yeah. There was no restriction that he had to do twice as much.
Right. And that is true for us. There are some people you find, I can remember, Don Craw and I went down one day and talked to a fellow. I don't think he ever made it out to worship, but he had been away from the church for 50-plus years. He'd become a Christian at about the age of 16, and, he'd just gone the way of the world. He called. Don and I went down to see him and helped him write his life, and he died within about 2 weeks later. So in that particular case, there was just no way to go back and reclaim all that he had done. But thankfully, we have some illustrations in the Bible, one of which is the thief, that that's not necessary. When you think about that thief, how long did he have an interest in living a righteous life? Not very long. I mean, we're probably talking about a few hours at most. And yet, what was it promised to him? Today, you're going to live in paradise. So that kind of gets into a different discussion as far as rewards and things, but it still makes the point. Whatever you have, as far as an opportunity, you may have hours left, you may have a few days or a few weeks or months, maybe a year, but during that time, we need to be faithful. Okay, we're going to stop here.